Tales Across the Prairie, the story of the conveyances and roads which cross the American prairies and Wisconsin's part in this transportation history. This program, Wisconsin Marks the Way. Host for this series is Dan Schutz, director of the Safety Division of the Wisconsin Motor Vehicle Department. Assisting him is Thurman Fox, the State Historical Society of Wisconsin. Here is Mr. Schutz.
Hello. Car owners increased from 20,000 in 1912 to 200,000 by 1918. So naturally, good roads and directions were important. Thurman, what are you reading there?
Well, Dan, I was just thinking. Today, when we want to take a trip, we can call the travel agency and plan a trip to Indianapolis, Indiana, and they fill it all out for us with no problem at all. But I see here in 1908, it wasn't quite that simple. It says here that this road to Prairie du Chien is a good road, but it's a little hilly to Pine Bluff. A number of very bad hills on the other side of Pine Bluff will be encountered as far as Mount Horeb. From here, it is fair, but a little hilly to Blue Mounds. From here, it is quite fair, though a little hilly as far as Mountford. From here, it is a little hilly, but quite fair. On the other side of Bridgeport, it is very hilly, but after that, rolling and fair the rest of the way.
It sounds mostly fair and hilly. I hope you get there. Everyone wanted to get there. They wanted to own an automobile. They wanted to travel. They wanted to go picnicking. I think an automobile had more of a status symbol at that time than it does today, for we're sure of this because not as many people owned automobiles. Talking about that, just a souvenir postcard that someone might have had would show the desire to get out and travel. It states, "Now that your folks have an auto and we have such lovely weather, don't you think that our two families automobilize together?" I suppose the greeting card writer here thought that he really had quite a pun. Well, everyone wanted to automobilize, they wanted to travel, but they lacked the good roads and they lacked the general marking of auto, that we have. Of course, today there was no marking at all. You'll recall that back in 1905, we had started taxing and licensing and causing these some kind of a tax against automobiles. And the people were beginning to believe that they ought to get something in return for this. In 1907, the Wisconsin legislature then authorized the Wisconsin Natural History and Wisconsin Geological Survey, and $10,000 was raised that they might experiment in road building. William Hotchkiss, a geologist, was put in charge of this experiment, this survey, and he was a great believer in state aid to highways. And he conducted part of this experiment, was conducting a campaign, apparently on the basis that we're going to have some state contribution if we're going to have good roads. Well, through his campaign, by 1908, we were to get state aid, as opposed to the old idea back in the days of the canal and the plank road and the railroad. We had a law that prevented the state from paying any money toward internal improvement. Well, this was then overcome. In 1911, the Wisconsin Highway Commission was first formed, and we got federal aid for highways as far back as 1916, this federal aid being restricted to those roads over which the U.S. mail was carried. Let's look at some of the first highways going back to that early period. In 1917, this is what we generally had at that time, there were 5,000 miles of highway in the state of Wisconsin. By 1917, this highway had increased, or by 1919, this highway had increased to 7,500, and by 1923, to 10,000 miles of highway. Incidentally, today in Wisconsin, there's about 96,000 miles of roadway here in the state. From 1911 to 1917, any markings that were on the highway were strictly unofficial. Trail promoters were more interested in trying to get towns to contribute to marking a certain trail than they were in giving information. In fact, they often gave misinformation. Probably the first marking of highways on telephone poles goes back to about 1911 in the state of Iowa, where they marked it. Wisconsin's first markings were triangular-shaped signs that we see here, like Danger Hill, or they would be tacked up on any fence post or anything that you had a chance to show. They just gave the best road between any two points, and the marks often deceived, as I said before, the traveling public, because there was interest enough paid into this trail promotion from some certain town to get the road to go by that. Marking roads sometimes was done with a dab of yellow paint, for instance, on a bridge, a rock, a barn, and this would be called the Yellowstone Trail. Such was a road from Chicago to Minneapolis, or the Black and Red Trail, or the Red Ball Trail, or the Cannonball Trail, or the Black Hawk Trail roadway. And here's a campground arrow. Camping was an important part of the early motorist life, and there were many of these signs that were developed. And this tourist, with his wicker baskets on and suitcases stowed on the running board of his automobile, he'd probably be lost several times. And if he stopped to ask somebody which way to go, he probably would leave there more confused than he started. Notice the rear windows and the curtain. Now, if you knew automobiles at this time, and say they had five vertical windows running up and down, you'd know that this was an old Dodge Touring, and the people that concentrated on this could look at one of these and know immediately. This scene is from near Park Falls. Note, too, that the bridge has a number on it, and here we see a type of marking. The first road that was marked to any extent was the Lake Michigan to Mississippi River Road from Milwaukee to Madison to Prairie du Chien to La Crosse, and that was just simply marked, as we've seen, by putting a little splash of paint or a sign here, and the auto tour books talked about bridges and creeks and hills and schoolhouses and barns that you would encounter at a certain spot. Here we see one of the earliest detour signs, and note now that we have a number on this roadway. This is one of the first, and there were a lot of detours because roads were constantly under construction and trying to be improved. Here was the actual little place that was under construction, and note that it says, though, that you are here. And the detour then, instead of going here, you went all the way around Lake Mendota, came up through Mendota, the state institution, and then came on up to County Trunk A and went through Wanakee, which is now Highway 19, and came back out and got to your Highway 12 out here at Springfield Corners. Of course, by 1917, Wisconsin highway engineers developed what generally became accepted, a marking sign all over the nation in many foreign countries. That is the marking of highways with numbers. And the 1917 highway map, it stated, it is harder to get lost on the roads of Wisconsin than to find the roads in the average state. And this means that we had numbered our highways. We were the leader in this entire program. Thurman, you have some of those old auto tour books and maps that were used in this time before we had the good markings we have today.
I think, Dan, this particular map would be a blessing to anyone who has experienced the frustration of trying to refold a modern highway map. This particular map case contains maps that were copyrighted in 1907, and in the case there are two maps, one of the Chicago and Milwaukee area, and the other map is of the Milwaukee, Oshkosh, and Green Bay district. The maps are pasted onto a cardboard finish, and then there's a number on the left side, number 4, and a letter at the top of the map. These are key letters. They indicate that the next number 4 would be the section that would be laid next to the map, and or if you're going north, the G section would indicate that the next G would be on top of this particular map. And then, of course, as you went off from one map, you would add the next map to it. Now, the roads that are on that map are not numbered as we ordinarily expect roads to be numbered today. There are numbers on there, but they indicate the tour route rather than the highway markings. And tour routes were listed in tour books. Now, this particular tour book is a photographic automobile map, and the date on this one is about 1905. The interesting thing about it, that this route was selected from Chicago to Milwaukee, it was not the only way to go. but it was the route that this man selected because he said the people along this way are used to seeing cars, and therefore the horses wouldn't be surprised by your coming along, and if you should happen to have some automobile trouble, people living along this route would be inclined to help you a little. And then also drugstores along the route sold gasoline, and this was where gas came from. They didn't have the service stations. There's some ads in this particular little book that are rather interesting. This particular ad here is on a battery, and it explains that if there are any girls along, don't let the Duro do all of the sparking. It's fine for the engine, but stops there. I don't know really what he meant by that. The photographs in the book indicate which way the individual is to turn. If this particular one you see, he has to make a left turn. And underneath it is the caption that describes the landmarks in the area. Water Tower on the right, and you turn on Tui Avenue to the Ridge Avenue, and next turn is a mile away. And then the signs along the way, this particular one explaining about bicyclers riding on sidewalks or without lamps after dark will be prosecuted. Automobiles must not exceed speeds of 8 miles per hour. And this particular one is put up by the Department of Police at Evanston, Illinois. Some private agencies put out tour books as well. Now, this particular one is entitled King's Official Tour Guide. And this also has an interesting ad in it that I'd like to call to your attention. This is an ad for Gasolet. This is a gasoline additive. We think this is something new today, but this particular book was copyrighted in 1915. And Gasolet was something that would increase mileage from 40 to 60%. This was not just ordinary additive. This was really great stuff. And it explains here that if you're using Gasolet, prevents pre-ignition, prevents pounding and overheating of the engine, and it leaves the cylinders and valves in an oily condition, and therefore aids or adds life to the engine. So really, this Gasolet is just not some common ordinary stuff that we're going to put in our gas tank. The description of the tours are a little different than we'd find in a tour book today. But since the highways are not yet numbered, it describes, first of all, the condition of the road. This particular trip is one from Madison to Portage, and it gives the road condition as fair. Most of it is gravel, and the balance of it is dirt and sandy. And then it explains a little bit that you would leave the capital at the corner of King and Main and Pinckney Streets, and you go north on Pinckney Street and so forth and proceed with the trip to Portage. We have another tour book from the same period of 1915, and this one looks like it's had a little more use than did the other one we were looking at. This is the Wisconsin Motorist Tour Book. The price is $1. And this is, again, is set up pretty much the same way. If we're describing a trip, for example, we have one marked here from Madison to Janesville. And the margin of the book has the mileage listed in the left-hand margin. So you start with Madison, you set the speedometer at zero, which we don't do very often anymore, and with the capital at the right, you go south on West Washington Avenue. You cross several railroad tracks, you go left on South Park Avenue, soon you pick up and run along with the trolley, and continuing straight ahead, the trolley turns to the left. You cross the railroad tracks and go left, you pass the left-hand road, you go over the railroad tracks, and you pass a right-hand road with a school at the left.
You have some of the signs, too, that we had on the highways before numbering began, don't you, Thurman?
Yes, these signs are paper signs, and they're not the metal signs that we're familiar with today. This particular one explains that we're, please help save the roads. Avoid the ruts. This was a common problem. Once the roads were wet, ruts were created very readily. And so avoiding the ruts helped to save the roads. And of course, then the Highway Commission thanks you for avoiding the ruts. This one explains that the road ahead is positively closed. Can be no doubt in your mind about this one. Now, you notice this particular one has arrows going both directions, and you're to follow these detour signs.
Well, the intent was that you would block off one arrow or the other, depending upon which way it was necessary to follow the detour. Now, I do have four metal signs, too, Dan, and these indicate, first, more or less, the history of signs in Wisconsin. The first one up in the upper left-hand corner, the triangular-shaped sign, was the first type. And then if we move across the top to Wisconsin 33, the smaller sign, and then down to a little larger sign, and then back to the left at the bottom, the large sign. These represent the gradual increase in signs from the very beginnings up to what we use today. And this increase in the size of the signs was created by faster and faster motorists, and so it became necessary to increase these signs in order to for the motorists to read them.
That's right. I believe the smallest one was 3 inches, and we finally get to where the last 33 is about 8 inches tall. Of course, seemed that knowing your way to a city park or to a campground was very important to these early motorists. And here we see some of the general directions that are given. And I believe this is probably a city park. Note that under the map, there are all kinds of directions there, with bulletins and detours, and it offers telephone service, and it offers firewood, and it talks about the bath facilities also. Of course, it was important because this was the way these people were traveling. But to...
Dan, I wonder if I could interrupt and show you. You talked a little while ago about a wicker suitcase. Now, here is a good example of one that might be used to carry the picnic lunch that you just talked about or someone's clothes. It's made out of wicker material, and it is lined, of course. The edges of the suitcase are of leather, but the entire basket is made out of wicker material. You pack your lunch or your clothes in it, and use your strap to tie it all up neatly so that your food or clothing will not spill out onto this highway.
This is what they were carrying on the running board of this earlier car that
right.
we looked at. Of course, to match the better roads and the better directions, cars were changing too from the old high-wheeled, high-seat 1904 model, and we got up to a 1910 or 1911. The cars were streamlined a little bit better. The engines were quieter. They were lower, the center of gravity. They were less dangerous. They weren't as apt to tip over as the later kind of car. And by 1912, there were 65 different makes of automobiles in America that had self-starters installed on them. Here in Wisconsin, there was a four-wheel drive auto company was organized along in this early period, and they built a truck, a four-wheel drive truck. It was a successful machine right from the start, and a little bit later then they built an automobile. They called it the Battleship, and this was an immediate success. The car seemed to have a real ability to go through sand and mud. In fact, four-wheel drive offered $1,000 to anybody with a car and driver that could follow the Battleship through mud or sand for 10 minutes. And in one summer, there were 116 people that brought their cars and tried this, and they all failed. The Battleship is still running. In fact, in 1959, it went out to California and raced Jack Benny's 1912 Maxwell. It also has been into New Orleans and been on the Bonneville Flats out in Utah. It has a 45-horsepower engine, a four-cylinder, dual ignition, four-wheel brakes. Well, a car such as this interested the government, and they were studying the success of the four-wheel drive, and in early military tests caused the company to switch then from cars to trucks entirely. And this is the U.S. Army Scout car built in 1911 by four-wheel drive. It was nicknamed the Nancy Hanks. It was used as a mail truck until 1944, and it traveled over 100,000 miles. They also made an ammunition carrier we see here used in World War I. It was so successful that a model of this is on display in the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C., and a boat carrying 400 of these to France in 1917 was torpedoed by the Germans, and lead was one of the great factors in leading to President Wilson's declaration of war. It was used for many purposes. It was fitted with some kind of a drilling mechanism, and they dug up 5,000 time-fused bombs with an outfit something like this and kept those from exploding. Lawrence of Arabia rode into Jerusalem with Allenby with a truck like this in 1918. It was the first trucks used in setting electric light poles and drilling for oil and removing snow. They were used by General Blackjack Pershing in Mexico, by Sun Yat-sen in China, and then a later version, of course, was used by our troops in World War II and the people who built the Alcan Highway. It had a real history of success, and because of this, there's a historical marker in Clintonville commemorating the invention of the first four-wheel drive motor vehicle. Of course, there were still horses working right alongside of motor vehicles all this time, and there's a line of maintenance trucks here that we see. This is in the Mexican campaign, about 1916. But even here at the University of Wisconsin, the Cadet Corps repaired autos and learned the secrets of keeping a four-wheel drive running. Gas was being tanked right out into the field, and trucks were being refueled on the spot. And Wisconsin-built trucks were in France and Germany and England during World War I. Here we see a conglomeration of trucks and pedestrians and horses all sharing the street at the same time. Liberty truck, many of you have probably heard of, hard rubber tires and chain drive. It was called Liberty because a whole group of American manufacturers adopted one standard engine and then they all made the truck. Much of what the same thing happened in World War II when American manufacturers made the 6x6. Of course, there were cars of other design in World War I. This is a Maxwell truck carrying food. The sign says motor trucks are being used to assist in relieving transportation problems. This one-ton truck is carrying 2,500 miles. Right here in Wisconsin, the Kissel car was one of the early automobiles. Its motto, Military Highway Scout Car Service First. At the same time, there was another car made in Wisconsin, the Mitchell down at Racine. There were even trailers for highway usage. This is a scene in Beloit, about 1915, one of the earliest trailers. And buses were coming into the scene, the sightseeing bus here, the Flatiron Building in New York. Leaving on a tour, you could buy a copy of this picture for 30 cents. Back home in Wisconsin, Madison, the Wisconsin Truck Company were making and using buses, also carrying the public. This is the Madison-Mendota Transportation Company just after World War I. And I think Thurman has some further data on this operation.
Before we get into this, Dan, I would like to show you an advertisement of a taxi in Milwaukee. It's the Kissel livery, or auto livery, and of course you can see it's a fancy car with very excellent upholstery. It had no top, but I think riding in a car with such elegance as that, you really wouldn't mind not having a top. In addition, I have an official Wisconsin motor coach guide, and this particular guide was prepared in August 20th, 1930, and it's a bus schedule. And not only for this company, but for other companies as well. And if you were in such a situation, like if you're in Milwaukee, you could take the rapid transit according to this schedule and to go to Sheboygan and then get another bus and go on to Green Bay or Sturgeon Bay or someplace else. But in addition to interest in coaches and in taxis, a lot of people were interested in racing cars.
Yes, and there were racers being developed. Essex developed a racing car that we see here. And following that, four-wheel drive that we've talked about earlier also built a racing car. It entered in the Indianapolis race in 1932 to 1936. It was driven by the four-wheel drive that we see here was driven by Barney Oldfield It achieved speeds up as high as 182 miles an hour. Of course, this wouldn't be on the Indianapolis track, probably on the straightaway. But the general purpose of the four-wheel drive racer, of course, was to publicize the company and the safety and traction and steering advantages of four-wheel drive. Even as recently as 1952, the four-wheel drive won a hill climb and race and was still in operating condition. But while there were a lot of racers being used, most of us were still traveling in along scenes such as we see here. This is a scene on the East De Pere Road about 1915. But the county board out on an inspection tour, I believe, of the road or something, the situation there, it looks like some kind of pavement. Thurman, you were going to show us something here.
I'd like to show you a heater, Dan. In Wisconsin, we're always concerned about the heat in the wintertime. And this particular one is made out of metal, but it has an upholstered cover. And heat was supplied not with hot water, but through this little door. Hot coals would be placed and then closed up, and then we were all set for a good cold winter day.
At least to keep your feet warm.
We'd hope so, yes. Then we have a very fancy and very attractive lamp, because, of course, you had to light the way somehow. And a wick on the inside that always had to be trimmed evenly, and fuel would be supplied through a container in the bottom. This was had very red glass on the one side and also red glass on the back. So altogether, this was a most attractive lighting device.
I suppose if it didn't get light enough, you got out and cleaned the lens and cut and trimmed the wick and went on traveling after to add some more kerosene. Of course, cars were changing. Of 127,000 automobiles that were built in 1909, 3,639 were electric, and some 2,370 were steam. The electric was favored by many people in the early automobile because it was reliable. It started if the batteries were charged at all, and you didn't have to go through this cranking. But of course, we saw the kerosene lamp. This yielded the carbide, and then to acetylene, and gradually we come to have a generator and electric lights that took over. And car heaters that Thurman showed you finally became an integral part of the automobile, and we put trunks on automobiles and moved the wicker basket into the trunk. By 1913, Michigan was turning out 45 different makes of automobiles, 25 in Detroit, Indiana 44, Illinois 39, Chicago building 14. Wisconsin had manufactured as high as 80 different makes of automobiles, and now down to settling on three, the Rambler being in Kenosha and the Chev being assembled. And the four-wheel drive. Here's a scene in Milwaukee that we'd like to have you look at. The largest shipment of autos ever unloaded in Milwaukee is what they say here. Sold and delivered in one day, paid for in 24 hours. This was September 15th, 1916. It has been said that the automobile did much to keep America from turning socialistic by creating an individual desire for ownership as compared to as opposed to the Marxian idea of universal ownership. At least American cars were cheaper than European cars, and this probably had a lot to do with that. I like this statement that an engineer made in 1913. Perfect as our cars were, he thought there was a lot of room for improvement because he referred to their powerful silent motors in 19. Well, by 1923, they hadn't improved that much, but our highways were being marked, and we were leading the way. And next time we'll be talking about from this time up to the present and the freeway system.
This has been Wheels Across the Prairie, the story of the conveyances and roads which cross the American prairies and Wisconsin's part in this transportation history. Next week, freeways. Host for the series is Dan Schutz, director of the Safety Division of the Wisconsin Motor Vehicle Department. He is assisted by Thurman Fox of the State Historical Society of Wisconsin. This series is produced by the State Historical Society of Wisconsin and WHA-TV. Written by Doris Platt and directed by Bob Liu in the studios of University of Wisconsin Television.